strong.
As pretty as I'm going to be today. All
right. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to our House Committee on Transportation Policy this fine Wednesday, February 22nd, 2017. We have a full agenda this morning, and we are privileged to have Representative Greenlich with us this morning to testify on House Bill 2109. And, Representative, we'll go ahead and begin that works or that public hearing, opening a public hearing on House Bill 2109. We may wander about a bit this morning, everyone, as we move through a kind of a convoluted process. But, Representative Greenlich, since you're here, we would love to hear what you have to say about 2109. Welcome to our committee.
Madam Chair, it's my privilege. Thank you for having me. I'm State Representative Mitch Greenlich, House District 33, which is northwest Portland, out into far reaches of Washington County, in the northeast corner of Washington County. And I'm here today to talk to you about a bill that is important for me as a public health professional. In my real life, I'm an emeritus professor of public health at Oregon Health Sciences University. When I'm not here having fun like we're having this morning. Madam Chair, committee, I'm really pleased to talk about 2109. It's about lead in aviation fuel. We've long since done away with leaded fuel in ground vehicles. And we now have a major source of lead pollution in Washington County and the Hillsborough Airport. Hillsborough Airport is the largest producer of lead in our environment in the state of Oregon. And the Troutdale Airport comes right behind it. Jet fuel is now what happens mostly at Portland International. It's not a leaded fuel. It's an aviation fuel for jet planes that does not require lead. But until recently, the single-engine planes in private aviation require leaded fuel to have a high enough octane to allow them to be operated safely. This is a particular problem in airports like Hillsborough Airport because it's not that planes fly in, get refueled, and fly away. It's a main source of pilot training, and therefore the airport has touch and goes all day long. There are a lot of landings, a lot of takeoffs, which serves to pollute the environment pretty seriously. This came to me from folks at Virginia Garcia Clinic in Beaverton because they were finding kids with high levels of lead in their body without any ordinary explanation for where that lead came from. It turns out it's very likely that that lead pollution comes from the Hillsborough Airport. As I said, until recently, leaded aviation fuel was necessary for the safe operation of general aviation single-engine aircraft, but it turns out it's not anymore. For most airplanes, there are alternatives that can operate safely without any modifications, or in some cases, with slight modifications of the engines. The problem is we can't get it into the marketing channels. Even though the Port of Portland's given the Hillsborough Airport a storage capacity and the ability to have an alternative to leaded aviation fuel, the market forces have stopped this from happening. In the last session, I had a proposal to have an increasing tax on leaded aviation fuel so that the market forces would allow the alternatives to develop more naturally. It turns out that was a complicated question, and 2109 takes a different approach. It sets a far-off goal 5 years from now to allow leaded aviation fuel to be sold for the next 5 years, but after 2022, it would essentially outlaw aviation fuel. It would give us lots of time to get the market moving, to get these alternatives, which are already in a few airports around the country, available for pilots to use. And even though for a while they would be a little bit more expensive than the normal avgas, that price by the time we got to 2022 would equalize. It would also give us enough time. It turned out there really wasn't alternative fuels available at that point for the legislature to come back and change that date. So this is a far-off promise. It's an attempt to get more serious about alternative fuels. You'll be hearing testimony from people who know a hell of a lot more about the topic than I do. So if we get too technical, I'll just have to defer to other folks who will be testifying later.
All right, sir. Thank you so
Thank
much.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Sir, you have before you a committee with one returning member. So you have seven individuals who have not been exposed to this issue before. So we appreciate you helping get us all educated on an issue that some of us have seen, but some of us have not had an opportunity to
weigh
in.
I hope they don't get too exposed to lead. That's not very healthy for anybody.
Thank you, Representative. We appreciate you being down here
Thank
this morning.
Thank you very much.
I think what I am going to do is close the public hearing on 2109 and go ahead and take care of a couple of work sessions. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2403. Mr. Walker, could you update us on where we are with this bill?
2403 requires drivers to exchange the name of insurance carrier and policy number of the insurance policy applicable to motor vehicle involved in an accident. Currently in statute, there's no requirement for the exchange of this information. There is no amendment, and we have received a minimal fiscal impact and a notice of no revenue impact on the bill. And we are ready to work and move the bill.
Thank you very much. I'll turn to Vice Chair Meek.
Thank you, Chair McEwen. I move House Bill 2403 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Meek moves House Bill 2403 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Yes, sir.
Yeah. Representative Lively, when he brought this, I remember there was some discussion here about including the Oregon driver's license number on there.
Yes.
And I thought he was going to add the amendment. I just saw this morning he did not.
But I believe I can clarify that.
Okay.
We had a discussion with ODOT, and that already is a requirement.
Okay.
It's already in the law.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Is there any more discussion? Clerk, will you call the roll, please?
Representative Wilson?
Aye.
Representative
Barretto?
Aye.
Representative
Evans?
Aye.
Representative Noble?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Stanley?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Vile?
Aye.
Aye. And I'd also like to note that Representative Witt is excused this morning. He was not feeling well yesterday. I assume he's not here because of an illness, so we will excuse him from this vote. The motion passes. Do I have a volunteer to carry this bill this morning? Representative Barretto, thank you very much. Okay, then I will close the work session on House Bill 2403, and I would like to open a public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 2575. Mr. Walker? I'm not sure.
House Bill.
Please.
Chair McEwen, members of the committee. House Bill 2575 adds exemption for balance trailers transporting a dory to a list of vehicles exempt from brake requirements. You have in front of you a Dash 1 amendment, which limits the exemption to those trailers operating in interstate commerce and weighing less than 26,000 pounds. We have a no fiscal impact and a notice of a no revenue impact, and the bill is ready to move if you so desire.
Sir, I believe we had a discussion about this, and there was some work done with ODOT. I believe, is there an amendment?
We've got the Dash 1 amendment, which limits.
And could you explain what the Dash 1 amendment does, please?
The Dash 1 amendment limits the exemption to those trailers operated in intrastate commerce and weighing less than 26,000 pounds. So if these individuals are taken their fish interstate, then this would not apply, and they would have to have the breaks. And if the trailer is over 26,000 pounds, they would also have to. And that gets us around the federal requirements.
Okay. I think we're over here this time. Vice Chair Lyle, please.
Hey, Madam Chair.
That's good.
Hang on one
question
second.
About amendments.
Is that
there's nothing
posted,
to read anywhere.
Jim?
The amendment on the
hang on a minute. Let
nothing
me get into
list,
the bill.
No paper, nothing.
One second, please. See nothing posted,
okay.
Sir.
All right. Well, we can discuss, but we can't move until for a moment or two. Let me get that going.
I thought Representative Gomberg may have been here to speak to that amendment as well, and I saw him out in the hall a minute ago, but I don't see him in the room. So.
He is in the adjoining committee room right now.
I think what we are going to do is, let's stand at ease for a moment and see if we can get that amendment posted. And then we can have a discussion about it. We won't be able to move the bill until the amendment has been posted for
1 hour.
1 hour. So we're going to have to hold off on this anyway. So I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2575, and we will come back to that. And let's move along and open a public hearing on House Bill 2463. I think we have some people here who are ready to speak to that bill. So we will begin there. And Mr. Walker, could you get us up to speed on House Bill 2463, please?
Chairman Kuhn, members of the committee, House Bill 2463 expands the circumstances under which the Department of Transportation may enter an agreement with an integrator.
Gentlemen, I would like to call up John Brueggemann, Amy Joyce, and Cheryl. And Cheryl, I can't read your last name.
Heemstra.
Thank you so much. I would have gotten that painfully wrong. So thank you for joining us this morning. Okay, I think they did put your name on this, but we're going to hold off. Please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Alan Tressiter, and I'm here today representing Motor Vehicle Software Corporation, along with my client, Mr. John Brueggemann. First, I'd like to briefly apologize to all of you we've talked to in the last week. We just got information late yesterday that we're going to need an amendment to this bill. DOJ has pointed out that we may have a constitutional problem on delegation of authority. We've been through this issue with motor vehicle software before. Remember, we did this 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to briefly, I think it's easily fixed, but we're not going to be able to go into work session today.
And Mr. Tressiter, I might draw to your attention, we have, again, one returning member and seven new members on our committee. So
yes.
Any education you would like to provide on this issue would be appreciated.
Okay, I'd be glad to do
that. Thank you.
2 years ago, we were in front of this committee and asked you for an amendment that allowed motor vehicle software to expand from their base in California into Oregon. You passed that bill. We've done that. We've opened an office in Portland. We have 15 employees in Portland. We have another employee in Bend that serves Eastern Oregon. We're expanding and bringing jobs to Oregon as we promised to you 2 years ago. I'll turn it over to Mr. Brueggemann to talk about what exactly we do, but I think you'll find it interesting and innovative.
Thank you. Welcome, Mr. Brueggemann.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, John Brueggemann with Motor Vehicle Software Corporation. And we are an electronic vehicle registration provider. So we, for auto dealers, fleet companies, financial institutions, folks like that, anybody who interfaces with the DMV, we actually allow, we create a software gateway into the DMV so that they can process all that work electronically. So auto dealers, folks like that, don't have to go to the actual DMV to take their paperwork in. And in most other, as Mr. Tressiter pointed out, we started in California, and we now have operations in Oregon was our first expansion state. We also have operations in Illinois and Virginia. And in many other states, they have the ability to provide a range of services into a provider such as us, has the ability to provide a range of services to the public and business community. And when this was first, the enabling legislation was passed, I believe, in about 2001 in Oregon, it only permitted auto dealers to participate in the program. Whereas, let's say in California, for example, auto dealers, fleet companies, lenders, insurance companies, all manner of companies have the ability to enter the program. And so what we're asking for in this bill is to expand what the DMV is able to, or who the DMV is able to allow into the program. For example, we service auto dealers currently. However, in Oregon, a lot of vehicles are actually, and in the Northwest generally, I should say, a lot of vehicles are actually financed through credit unions and community banks, and they do their own title work. But because of the way the statute is crafted, they can't participate in the program. So they're still taking paper to the DMV. And so we're simply looking to allow the DMV to have additional authority to let other entities into the program. Thanks.
Chair McEwen and members of the committee, Amy Joyce from the Department of Transportation. The DMV has had a great partnership with MVSC over the last year or so since they came on as the new provider of electronic vehicle registration. In the past, there was a different company. We opened up what's called a request for applications, which is a unique kind of procurement strategy where companies can show that they are able to utilize this statute. And then we say, yes, you know, you do have the capabilities, and then we rank order the companies because we can only have one company working at a time. MVSC was the first on the list when we opened that up and came in and did that work. And after they did that, the next folks sort of fell off and declined to participate. So currently, MVSC is the sole provider of this great service. So the bill, as intended, would expand the statutory authority for DMV to have relationships with companies, including MVSC or others, if we were to reopen that RFA process. So we're looking forward to continuing that very good relationship we have with this company to provide a service to businesses in Oregon. Late yesterday we learned from DOJ that they have certain concerns, and we're also very confident that we can come to a resolution that will work for everybody.
Thank you.
Chair McEwen, members of the committee, my name is Cheryl Heemstra. I'm the Deputy Legislative Director at the Oregon Department of Justice. As you've heard, we did raise a concern. As you probably know, after bills go through both chambers, it goes to the governor's desk, and the governor sends it over to us for a constitutional review to make sure that bills are constitutional. Eventually, if laws get challenged, DOJ is the lawyer for the state and will be defending that law in front of the courts up to the U.S. Supreme Court if necessary. So we like to flag things early if we can on constitutional issues. As written, the bill says that the Department of Transportation can basically farm out any function of the department. Any function is really quite broad, and I think broader than we need here. As written, any function could include rulemaking or who gets licenses or a bunch of things that are actually in, you know, government purview and need to stay there for constitutional reasons under Article 4 of the Oregon Constitution. So we're happy to work with the proponents. We're happy to work with DMV to narrow that language. But yes, there's constitutional issues. Case law, Corvallis Lodge, VOLCC prohibits this broad of an exemption. So just needed to get that on the record, and we're happy to work with the proponents to find a good solution.
Wonderful. Questions for this panel? Representative Evans.
Thank you, Chair. And this is just a follow-up to a conversation that we had with MVSC. One of the things as we go into this brave new 21st century is contracting out certain types of services that, at least in many ways, have been traditionally a public effort. And we had a great conversation. I just want to ask for the record. You would be okay with an amendment that allowed for a greater discussion of transparency in terms of wages and scale of work in the rules process. Is that correct?
Madam Chair and Representative Evans, absolutely we would be.
Thank you.
Representative McLean.
So this particular service, if I go to an auto dealer and I buy a car and they say, we'll take care of the license for you, they're using your service?
Madam Chair and Representative McLean, they may be. So some dealers, about half the dealers in the state, choose to use electronic vehicle registration, so the EVR gateway into the DMV, and about half still use paper. So, and it's really a choice of the dealership how they choose to do that.
Okay. There's nothing mandatory in the bill, yeah. Representative.
All right. I will go forth and do good work and bring us an amendment, and we will revisit the bill when we have an amendment in hand.
Thank
you very much. And so I'm going to close our public hearing on 2463. And how are we doing, Mr. Walker, on potential paperwork arriving? I'm trying to figure out where I would like to go next.
Okay, well, we need to hold off. Chair McEwen, members of the committee, we need to hold off on 2695.
And also on 2575, so we don't have anything forthcoming yet.
No.
So I will then reopen the hearing, and may I have our witness list, please? Great. Then we are going to resume our public hearing on House Bill 2109. And I would like to call up Ron Sturba, Mary Rosenblum, and Jim, if I'm going to get this wrong, sir, Lubisher. Am I close? Please correct me if I'm far off. Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to our committee. In any order you choose, please.
I'm sorry?
In any order you choose, please.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me begin then. I will
Thank
just
you, ma'am.
Step forward and we'll move this along.
Thank you.
I am Mary Rosenblum. I live in Canby in Clackamas County. I'm also the Vice President of Legislative Affairs for Oregon Pilots Association. And I'm here to kind of give some basic information and correct some perceived misinformation about this issue. This is a much larger issue than it seems on the surface. On the surface, it's very straightforward. We have lead in aviation fuel. We got rid of it in gasoline. Let's get rid of it in aviation fuel, which we're in the process of doing. A federal program, the PAFI program, Piston Aviation Fuels Initiative, is ongoing, mandated by the FAA, who for once is actually on schedule to do something by the end of 2018. They are testing two fuels that will be replacements for our current 100 low lead, which has a lot less lead in it than the old aviation fuels, but still has lead. And there is not a pilot in this state that wants that lead to remain in aviation fuels. However, this is a very complex chemical issue. I did send in a PDF on the PAFI process. I don't know if it got to the committee or not. I didn't. You did. Okay, good. So I won't review that. You've had a chance to look at it and understand the complexity, that it's not just a matter of saying, let's take the lead out. It'll fly. They won't fly. And some of the misinformation that you may have gotten is that there are alternative fuels already available. That's not actually the case. There are some small aircraft that can use our automobile gasoline if it does not contain ethanol. The ethanol causes serious problems and will actually cause the engine to stop running in flight. So, but that's a fairly, it's quite a small percentage of the existing fleet. There's a supplemental type certificate that can allow it. The rest of these aircraft cannot use that, and there is currently no unleaded alternative that is safe. You use a different fuel in your car in Denver than you do in Portland, and these aircraft go from sea level in Portland to 11,000 or 12,000 feet in our small piston-powered fleet. And these aircraft are important for pipeline surveys, agriculture, search and rescue, emergency services, flight training, and our commercial airlines are currently looking at a crisis in pilot numbers coming down the road, as well as recreation, and contribute $3.2 billion as of 2015 to the Oregon economy directly. So this is a bigger issue, and it's a federal issue. We cannot put anything in our tank unless the FAA says we can. Otherwise, we will be, whether we fall out of the sky on your roof or not, we are going to be in trouble. So this is, I called Chris DaCosta, who is the CEO of Swift Fuels, and they have one of the two fuels that are currently in phase two testing to be selected by the FAA, one or both, for a drop-in replacement for our 100 LOLEP. Chris told me that it is still on track that late in 2018, the FAA will probably, unless something intervenes, they are on track to decide what will be an acceptable approved replacement. At that point, the FAA will roll out a transition timeline, very much as we did with automotive fuels, so that FBOs that happen to have 1,000 gallons of rather expensive aviation fuel in their tanks can go through that, order the new fuel, and have that available. When I asked Mr. DaCosta what is the best route forward, what he told me is that any incentive to encourage fuel producers in the area would probably accelerate this process. Right now, nobody is producing this. This is actually compatible with biofuels technology. Oregon State University has been producing Jet A. The same process could be used to turn, say, slash from our logging areas into unleaded aviation fuel. So there are incentive programs that encourage producers to move in here, can bring jobs in, and make this program happen faster once these fuels are approved. Certainly, we understand that down the road there is room to say, all right, there's an alternative that is in place. You can't use leaded fuel anymore. I will tell you personally that when this fuel becomes available and I taxi my RV4, which is what I fly, up to that pump and I fill my tank up, I am going to be extremely nervous when I take off, because I know aviation fuel works in my airplane, and it is not the FAA who is going to be sitting next to me in that cockpit. It is myself. So there is going to be a slow acceptance of this fuel, but once the FAA has rolled out this timeline and it is available, then it is appropriate to say, okay, folks, it's out there. You can buy it. Now you have to. But let's follow with the federal timeline on this. If we put an arbitrary date on this fuel and say, okay, on 2022, we're done, we will shut down general aviation in this state, and it will cause enormous hardships to a lot of small businesses, causing some stoppages in interstate commerce, firefighting, search and rescue, all the things I've mentioned. Plus, we will have Washington, Idaho, and California pilots flying into our airspace, which is controlled by the FAA, and dumping lead. So there is a route forward here, but this is not it. I do want to share one brief personal anecdote that may illustrate some of the issues here. In 1977, my husband and I bought a house. It was right near Troes Airport, actually, and we were going to get pregnant. And at the time, there was a concern about environmental lead. So we had our water tested. Our water was extremely high in lead. And we would never have known this. We were kind of environmentally conscious, and we tested it. We would have had lead contamination. We had detectable blood levels of lead. It would have been easy to say, oh, we're next to an airport. But it wasn't. It was our water. The Department of Health said, run your tap for 10 minutes before you drink it, and then they'll be down below the federal standard. Well, we replaced the plumbing. I had good friends with a two-year-old who bought a beautiful old house in northeast Portland. They put in raised beds. They were very organic. Their son tested very high with lead in his blood. The soil in their yard was so contaminated from the old house paint that they said, you should pave your yard. So lead exists, and it isn't, it's the cause and effect of where it comes from. When Susanna, Congresswoman Bonamici, contacted me a year ago and looked into this and went to the health department and the DEQ, this was last year in 2016, they both said not one case of detectable lead in children's blood can be traced to airborne emissions. They all went back to leaded house paint or plumbing. So please keep this in mind. This is a big issue. There is a way forward on this. This bill is not, and we really recommend it do not pass. Thank you.
Ms. Rosenblum, is it... I had a conversation with the Port of Portland recently, and it's my understanding that the infrastructure to move towards the availability of this fuel is already underway. Is that correct?
There are some. The Port of Portland is putting a tank in there, so that will be available. The problem is right now is if you already have aviation gasoline in your tank, which will cost a small business fuel provider $150,000 to put in a new tank. Mm-hmm. So the Port of Portland is putting in a tank to make that available, and that will be, but that's one place. Currently, even MoGas, as it's called, are ethanol-free 95, I think it is, octane gasoline. It's only available, as far as I know, at Lebanon, or you can have it private. If you have a private tank, you can have some delivered.
Thank you. Sir, welcome to our committee.
Yes. Good morning, Ron Sturba. I'm a pilot, 46 years. Chair, Representative McKeon.
McKeon. Thank you. Happens
and
all the time.
Members of the chair here. I was a student at the Portland area campus about 7 years ago. I studied aviation for the workplace. My class of approximately 18 students, four of them were young adults who had just finished their tour of duty with the Armed Services of the United States. Some are international students coming to the United States to learn about aviation. Others are citizens in Portland taking classes to further their education or to start a new career. I feel this bill is a backdoor approach at killing educational opportunities for our citizens and guests to our country. And it's a slam door to our military personnel. I take offense to coming in with a stoppage of 100 low lead. The government has already worked at lowering the lead content in aviation fuel. That's why it's called low lead. We are on track. Federal government will come through with this. We already know about that. A new manufacturer of aircraft engines, Rotax, has already designed their aircraft engine to run on auto fuel. The FAA does issue supplemental type certificates called STCs to use auto fuel in your plane if you so wish. I believe there is a personal agenda here by three representatives of Portland to shut down the Hillsborough Airport and limit operations at PDX. Let me say this. Hillsborough Airport, if it was it turned into neighborhoods, would have approximately 15,000 more vehicles in the neighborhood. Traffic would be a gridlock. Fuel emissions would destroy the quality of air. Let me say, you have ever gone fishing? Have you ever tied a lead sinker on a fishing line? Hello? I said lead sinker. There's also lead solder in residential plumbing in many neighborhoods in Portland, as well as the paint on their homes. Concerns for lead in aviation fuel has been addressed by the federal government. I believe Senator Riley, being a veteran of the United States Air Force, should have shared this information with the other representatives in furthering their education. Aircraft using kerosene does not contain lead. Just because an airplane's in the air doesn't mean it's running on leaded fuel. Here in the state capitol, there is a sign in the men's washroom that says, "Don't drink the water." Now, there is a new item that is starting to surface, and it's a sign that says, "Lead safe." The Statesman Journal printed that on Monday of this week. I was surprised to see it, but I welcomed the new image. Neil White presented at a previous sitting hearing, Senate 115, the EPA testing around Hillsborough Airport. The findings were below the EPA's safe levels of lead. I want to say that the federal government and the pilots, we all want lower lead. We want to be safe, and we want to live longer. I lost my job. That's why I took the aviation classes in Portland. No, I didn't get hired, even though I took classes in human resources and aviation safety. I'm too old. That's okay, because I volunteer my time at airports with ODA to make our airports safe, even though I don't get paid. I share my knowledge and my education with anyone who will hear. Thank you very much.
Good. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Dr. Lubisher. I live in Hillsborough, near the airport there. I'm, as I said, a pediatrician, and I'm here today to speak on behalf of the children who live near the Hillsborough airport. They couldn't come today. I check all my kids at about 1 year of age for lead in their blood, and 80% have had detectable levels of lead. Now, years ago, that would be considered the levels that I see averaging. Years ago, that would be considered nothing or hardly anything. But the more we know about lead, the more we know how potently toxic it is. And the CDC has come to the conclusion years ago that there's no safe level of lead in a child's blood. And the most concerning effect of lead has to do with stunting their IQ and contribution to the development of ADHD, which is it takes a serious toll on not only the child, the family, and even society. Lead poisoning has been considered, or should be considered, the largest public health disaster that we have had. Now, it's true that the majority of lead poisoning and levels come from, or have come from, paints and water. But air pollution is now one of the others that we need to eliminate. The CDC has recommended that all non-essential uses of lead be eliminated. That was in 2005, and many years ago. Now, the Hillsborough Airport is the largest, that you've heard, the largest facility source of lead pollution, air pollution in Oregon. That the air children breathe around that airport contains lead has been confirmed by Portland State University measurements. Now, you will hear testimony, and you have already heard that the levels that have been measured are below the national ambient air quality standard for lead. Now, first, please understand that many of the measurements have not been done near the airport. They're half a mile to a mile away. And secondly, the national standard is, quote, expected to achieve the public health policy goal recommended in all but a small percentile of the population. Now, in their subcommittee's reports, the subcommittees concluded that a standard of 0.02 micrograms versus leaving it at 0.15 micrograms per meter cubed would actually achieve less loss of IQ levels in children. But again, the overall goal was that we just want to prevent the IQ loss of a few points in all but a small percentile of the population. Unfortunately, that small percentile of the population are those kids that live near lead-emitting sources, and that would be including the Hillsborough Airport. Hillsborough Airport is not necessarily unique, but it is a flight training airport, and those airplanes don't just take off and go somewhere else. They just stay in the area, and they go round and round at low altitudes emitting lead. Now, I don't think anybody can argue that any additional lead in a body's system is not harmful, and science has pretty much concluded that, has concluded that. So even though lead is maybe in the air is less of a concern than if it's in your soil or your paint or your water, it's still of concern. So I do support House Bill 2109 with a couple caveats. 2022 is a ways out. I would suggest we even go sooner than that, but I can understand some of the positions on waiting till then. I do have another concern, though, that the that it may not be in line with the Clean Air Act, which kind of controls aviation fuel. So I do think an amendment, perhaps, that would look at where the primary problem is, and that is flight training in around the Hillsborough Airport and other flight training areas, an amendment that would prohibit intrastate flight training activity from using lead in their fuels. And by just limiting to intrastate, then we would not run afoul of federal preeminence and federal interstate commerce law. So I urge you to consider this strongly, and a new fuel for the aviation community was started to be developed in 1995. That's a long time ago. It's not proven that that's going to happen. I wish it would happen. But lead in our society has been a long war, and we're not quite to the end of it. So thank you for your consideration.
Questions for this panel? Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You stated that most of the lead comes from paint or water, and then you did studies of children around the Hillsborough Airport. Did you do studies of children all over Portland and the amount of lead content, so that you're not just studying one location here, but comprehensively?
No, this was just my own personal practice. It was just in Aloha, but the measurements were done. Are you asking about the levels in my children?
Yeah.
Those were just, most of my children come from the Aloha Hillsborough area, no, not the whole Portland area. But yeah. There was a study in, I think, in Duke, North Carolina, that did studies that evaluated children from all over the state, and they found that close proximity had higher levels.
Can I follow up?
Yes, sir.
So does lead stay in your system, or does it work its way out?
It can. It deposits in your bones and stays in your body somewhat. It's locked in there to some degree, and it's a balance. There is some loss, more so, I think, in adults. And I'm not an expert on exactly the steady state and all that, but it is cumulative. I mean, it's not like it just comes into you and then it's gone. It adds, and it depends how much you're getting. And it can add up in your body, but it can leave also somewhat. I could give you a better answer on that, or some people could, but I can't.
Vice Chair Vial.
Madam Chair, Mary, do you know if there are any other states or jurisdictions that have done anything similar to what's being proposed here?
Madam Chair and Representative Vial, no, there are not at this time.
Thank you.
Representative Witt.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
My apologies to the panel that I came in late, so I didn't hear all of your testimonies. But was it Ron? And I didn't catch your last name.
Sturba.
Ron, do you know how much it costs to swap out an engine for a Rotax engine that you described earlier?
Yes, presently the aircraft that I own is an aircraft from Vans Aircraft Company in Aurora. Because of the style of that aircraft, I cannot have the smaller model Rotax engine, which is being provided for what they call light sport and usually only a two-seat aircraft. The industry seems to be going that way toward a more efficient engine. We're in that gray area now as the sky's clear to go to unleaded and olive fuel. I would someday like to see the Rotax make the style engine larger that fits in my particular aircraft. So I am restricted to the type of aircraft engine that I have now that uses 100 low lead.
Follow.
Yes, sir.
Yes, may I add to that a little, if I may,
please.
Madam Chair, Representative Witt. The problem with the Rotax engine, it is an experimental engine. It is not permitted by the FAA to be installed in any certified aircraft, which is the majority of our fleet. Experimental aircraft are built by the owner. They are not certified by FAA. FAA makes no guarantee that they will perform. And the Rotax engine is a long way, if it's even on that road, to certification for our standard aircraft.
Do you have any idea how much a Rotax engine costs?
As I recall, it's in the 20s, 25,000 approximately, as opposed to a certified Lycoming, which will be up closer to the 40,000 range. It is not inexpensive.
And to pull and replace an engine?
Oh, that would depend on how many mechanics hours. An engine overhaul or teardown, which is required at a certain number of hours by the FAA, usually will run, $30,000. So I would imagine that the cost of the engine, even though it's less, that by the time you pay to have an A&P airframe and power plant mechanic, also certified by the FAA, remove that engine and replace it with a Rotax, even if you were able to do so, would still be in that neighborhood. The cost of the engine with many thousand more in mechanics times. Again, you can't do it if you own, say, a Cessna or a Piper, one of the certified aircraft. The FAA won't do it. The plane will automatically be grounded.
Okay. Representative McLean.
Mary, I didn't hear your last name, so it's okay to call you Mary.
That's fine.
I heard you say that you believe that pilots are all in favor of going to the unleaded fuel, and you said that today, too.
Yes.
So, I mean, they're understanding that there will be lead fuel that will be going off the market.
We understand that. And there is no pilot I have met that says, it's not very much. We should just live with it. I will say that no one is going to rush to put this fuel into their tanks for the reason I said. I will go get it when it's available, and I will be terrified on takeoff, because if my engine fails on takeoff, I will most likely die. And the FAA has told me, you can take off with this fuel in your Lycoming with 320, and it will work fine. But I'm in that pilot seat. So it is going to be, it will not be a rush to the pump, but as more people use it, which is why Mr. DaCosta had said the more you can do to incentivize producers to bring it to market and pilots to use it. If five of my neighbors are flying it and it's like, oh, no problem, I've got 100 hours on my plane, and you know, and he says they're getting better performance than with the leaded. So, you know, it will spread more rapidly. At first it will be slow, and as word of mouth gets around that nobody's died yet, everybody's engines are working, then it will catch on much more rapidly. And people are, pilots do care. No, we're not, it's not like, oh, heck with it, poison the kids. You know, we want to fly our planes. That's not the attitude. But on the other hand, do you want to fly with me in my plane?
The first time.
I'll happily take any of you up. I have two seats.
Representative Barreto, and then we'll need to move on to the next panel.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Just to answer Representative Witt's question on changing engines out, most of these planes are 40, 50, 60, 80 years old. Technology is from long ago. Even the new engines, the Continentals and the Lycomings that they replace for $30,000, $40,000 in these airplanes still have to be built according to the way they were designed back then because the FAA works really, really slow. And so it's not like the automotive technology that we have today that continues to go with technology. These are old, and they continue to be old, and to change them is almost like an act of God. So,
thank you, Representative Barreto.
All right. Thank you so much. Sir, did you have one more quick comment?
One brief comment.
We have more behind you.
You bring up the cost of changeover for the aviation industry. A recent analysis by, it was either MIT, via Harvard, whatever back there, looked at the toll and the cost of loss of a few IQ points in kids, and the cost comes out to be millions and billions of dollars a year. So that needs to be factored in, too.
We appreciate that. Next, I'd like to call up Terry Coleman, Alan Alexander, and Warren Henderson. Or Hendrickson. Henderson. Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning. Welcome.
Thank you. Honored Chair and committee members, my name is Terry Coleman, and I'm a pilot, and I co-own and operate a private airport in Clackamas County. Lenhart Air Park was founded by my father, Jack Lenhart, approximately 60 years ago, and this business has contributed to the Oregon economy in numerous ways over this time. Each of these ways of contributing to the economy rely on aviation fuel, the avgas that has a low lead in it right now. As of today, Lenhart Air Park has over 100 aircraft based at its facility, and I'm representing each of our aircraft owners as well as myself, an Oregon business owner, and asking that you vote against House Bill 2109. House Bill 2109 has negative effects on pilots and suppliers of fuel who have no control over the availability of a non-leaded option for aircraft fuel. A non-leaded option for aircraft fuel, which is reasonably priced, must be made available first before making the sale of or the purchase of low-lead aviation fuel illegal. Lenhart Air Park's 100-plus aircraft, which its owners pump thousands of dollars into Oregon's economy each year, depend on this. Emergency services, firefighting, search and rescue should not and cannot be halted in Oregon, but they could be if this House Bill 2109 is passed. Leaded fuel has no significant effect on Oregon residents, according to Oregon's DEQ. But even though avgas has never been demonstrated to have any significant effect on circulating lead levels, I obviously would abide by the law and provide unleaded fuel when the fuel companies and refineries provide it to me. House Bill 2109 is premature and not needed at this time. It would only hurt Oregonians and Oregon businesses. And I'm asking for your vote of no on House Bill 2109. Thank you. If you have any questions, feel free.
I have one.
Representative McLean.
Ms. Coleman, what I heard you say was that you're willing to go along with the concept of this House bill as long as it follows the FFA timeline.
No, that's not what I'm saying. Okay, so within this House bill, it's saying it's going to make it illegal to purchase low-lead aviation fuel, I assume, after this passes, right? Well, it's not even available at this time. The FAA will have it available in 5 years. is what they're saying that they will do, and that's what the law says we have to do at this time, right? Is in 5 years, we can't use the low-leaded fuel anymore. But this House bill makes it so that that could be at most any time, even before the non-leaded aviation fuel is available.
Well, my understanding was that it was the date that was actually in here was that 5 years. It's January 21st of 2022. So I just thought I heard you say that you wanted us to go by the FAA,
yes.
Because that was the timeline that was more practical. And so I was just asking you that when it's available, if you'd buy it.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. I'm sorry, I misunderstood you
Thank
in the beginning.
You. Please, sir.
Let me go. Mm-hmm. Good morning, Chair McCune and committee members. My name is Warren Hendrickson, and I am the Northwest Mountain Regional Manager for the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association. AOPA is the world's largest general aviation organization, and I serve as the organization's field representative in 7 states, Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Montana, Wyoming, Utah, and Colorado. So I cover a wide swath, and that includes over 5,100 Oregon pilots and aircraft owners. AOPA opposes House Bill 2109. So, Chair McCune, I'm glad that you mentioned there are new members here of the committee. Mm-hmm. So let me take a moment or two and perhaps maybe educate everyone as to exactly the issues that surround this bill on multiple levels, and also explain why AOPA opposes this bill as premature and improper scope. The first question you may have is why do we have lead in aircraft? And why do aircraft piston engines require leaded fuel? And as Mary Rosenblum alluded to, it's simply to allow safe operation of the aircraft engine. The octane has to be at a certain level to operate at multiple altitudes, various, you know, sea level up to mid-level and low-level flight levels from 15 to 20,000 feet, and as a result, excuse me, must actually perform at different air densities. And so that octane boost can only be provided by lead. They've looked, they've researched, and so far nothing allows for the safe and continuous operation of the engine without a lead additive. Now, initially, the lead was actually as high as 130 for the higher performance engines, those with high compression. It has been reduced safely, as safe as possible, to a low lead level of 100 octane, and that is the lowest, safest level that they can go. There are a small percentage of aircraft types in the fleet, general aviation fleet, that are very low compression, that operate strictly at low altitudes. Those are the ones that are eligible under the supplemental type certificate that Mr. Sturba referred to before, that can use ethanol-free unleaded fuel, MoGas, or there is a 94 unleaded fuel available too, but is limited to aircraft types and a very, very small percentage of the fleet. As a result, and those supplies are tough to come by. Swift Fuels can only produce 1,000 gallons at a time by small batches of that 94 unleaded fuel, and they are the only single supplier nationwide. So it is very, very limited in terms of its availability and its production capability. So that's one issue there. And the other question with regard to the leaded fuel is once there is an alternative. Now, this Piston Aviation Fuels Initiative that the FAA is taking on right now is a tremendous effort, and it's got, you know, all the aviation agencies, and I'll mention those in a little bit, that are involved in this. But the question is even if the science is proven, what is going to be needed to introduce it into the marketplace? Can we even use the existing tanks and infrastructure and piping for delivery and production? Mm-hmm. That is unknown right now. We don't know if we can take an existing leaded fuel tank, clean it, empty it, dispose of its contents, and then use that for this new product. We don't know that yet. And as a result, what is the time frame, you know, going to take before that's available and can be done? So although this phase two study is on track, and hopefully by the end of 2018, and we all know how science works, right? There's no guarantees of the outcome. So one is the timeline is moving forward, but the outcome is unknown. And your bill, this House bill, is saying that the science will in fact be proven and it will happen by a date certain. We don't know that. We don't know that the science is proven. We don't know that the infrastructure can be provided. So with regard to Hillsborough Airport, to give you an idea on the extent of the problem here in Oregon, there are 7,700 aircraft registered in Oregon. The vast majority of them use leaded aviation fuel. So you would be shutting down a good portion of the general aviation fleet. At Hillsborough Aircraft, it is the single busiest airport in the state of Oregon. 253,000 operations per year. That's just shy of 700 takeoffs and landings a day. An operation is a takeoff or a landing. So 253,000 puts it well ahead of Portland International. So it is the single busiest aircraft in the state. Of the aircraft that are based at Portland, at Hillsborough, 72% of them are piston aircraft, single and multi-engine, that use leaded fuel. The vast majority of them do. A few of them would be eligible for unleaded fuel, but it's not available to be sold at Hillsborough Airport right now. There are 30 jets and 40 helicopters. Helicopters, in some cases, use the leaded fuel. Depending upon the engine type, some use jet fuel. And jet fuel is not leaded because it is kerosene derivative. Okay, so if that helps in terms of the technical capabilities. But that lead content in fuel is an absolute requirement to assure safe operation of the engines. Now, with regard to Hillsborough and the lead in particular, the EPA and the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality share the same standard. And it turns out that in recent measurements at Hillsborough Airport, the actual measurement of lead in the ambient atmosphere is 50 times less than the EPA and Oregon's own Department of Environmental Quality standards. So it is not an issue. The EPA requires lead monitoring any time more than 1 ton of lead per year is emitted into the atmosphere. Less than half of that amount is emitted in the vicinity of Hillsborough Airport, and therefore the EPA does not require lead monitoring. The EPA also has not issued an endangered finding for leaded avgas. They have not banned it as a substance. Now, we all recognize the harmful effects of lead. That is not an issue. What we haven't done is establish a cause and effect relationship between the lead that is being found and the cause being unleaded aviation fuels. That is the question I would ask, you know, the committee to ask other members that present themselves before this public hearing to establish that cause and effect relationship between leaded avgas. So we are in agreement that it is a toxin. The question is how do we do it? And there's already a process underway to go ahead and take care of that. The question that comes up probably is this bill going to, in fact, protect the environment for Oregonians? Well, not necessarily, because although you stop this industry from taking from operating here in Oregon, you don't prevent overflight. Oregon does not control the airspace. So leaded fuel aircraft are going to continue to transit the airspace over Oregon. Air masses from Washington, California, Idaho will still bring their leaded fuel content in the ambient atmosphere over the state of Oregon, and those overflight aircraft are going to introduce more leaded emissions into the atmosphere as well. So you're not going to stop all lead with this bill. That's an impossibility. Let's say that the bill goes forward. What's the impact going to be? According to the Oregon Department of Aviation, airports and their businesses are a $22 billion economic impact on the state of Oregon, 76,000 jobs. No, those are direct numbers. That doesn't include the indirect numbers, you know, associated with the services and the provided and how those dollars flow through the local economies. Why do businesses locate near airports, and why are they using aircraft? Because of the transportation capability that is there. So the end result is if you shut down the leaded fuel option, you shut down those businesses and those transportation options. Since 2009, over $300 million of federal money and $90 million of Connect Oregon money have been devoted to airport projects. If you stop the general aviation industry, you stop that federal money, you stop the Connect Oregon money going to, and so where is the tax base and where then are the jobs that are created as a result of those grant funds that are being provided to airports and their infrastructure right now? Let me put a human face on this. I'm an Angel Flight pilot, and an Angel Flight West is a humanitarian organization. We transport medical patients on our own time, in our own airplane, at our own cost, to provide them a means to efficiently get to the health care that they need. This past summer, last August, I live in Washington State, I flew some children that were economically disadvantaged and health challenged to a camp in Washington. There are 66 other Angel Flight pilots like me, and last year they flew over 285 missions and 875 flying hours of transporting medical patients to where they needed to go. We all use piston engine aircraft, and the vast majority of us use leaded aviation fuel. So you would shut down that humanitarian operation, and you should see the look on the kids' faces when they have an opportunity that they would not otherwise have absent the Angel Flight, mission being served. So that's just one of the things that would be shut down with this. The scope of this leaded fuel issue is clearly one of federal purview, not one of state purview. And the organizations that are involved in this are AOPA, the American Petroleum Institute, the General Aviation Manufacturers Association, the National Air Transport Association, the National Business Aircraft Association, the Experimental Aircraft Association, and the FAA. This is a who's who of every important and essential aviation organization in the country. And they are all working to find a scientific resolution to this leaded fuel issue, but the results cannot be known. So,
sir, thank you. I'll ask you to begin.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
So the question is, what should the legislature do at this point? The first is, do not pass this bill. It is premature, untimely. It's a federal solution waiting to be determined. The other thing is instead of putting up stop sign around and build a wall around Oregon, I would put out a welcome mat. Create the incentives that will encourage companies to come and build their unleaded fuel production and infrastructure and distribution facilities here in the state of Oregon, bring a greater economic impact, and the public relations value to the state of Oregon would be tremendous. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir. Welcome. I want to make sure we get everybody in today. We have three more people who want to testify on this, and we have other bills that we need to work. So if you could keep it to 3 or 4 minutes, I'd be grateful.
Madam Chair, I promise you I can do that. One reason
thank
I
you,
like
sir.
To follow Warren is that he answers all the questions, and I just get to do a little cleanup.
Perfect. We like it.
It is a pleasure to be here. My name is Alan Alexander. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Airport Management Association. Our role is to represent all Oregon airports, both public and private, even though the majority of our membership are public and public use airports. We had an opportunity last year to address this in a different capacity, and we're just as concerned this year as we were last year about this. Warren covered all the why we have lead and fuel and what it represents. He also covered some of the environmental considerations. I know from a perspective of airports, no airport wants to do anything to damage the environment that they can possibly avoid. And that's certainly true with fuel. However, being a realist, there is a process. The FAA is driving it along with the industry to produce a better fuel, and it's coming. But there's no guarantee that might happen. But what the guarantee we do have with a piece of legislation like this is the impact it would have on Oregon airports. We have 7 airports where there's air carrier service. The majority of our airports are general aviation airports. The majority of the fuel that we're talking about here would be consumed at a general aviation airport. It's a livelihood and a business of these airports. And the fuel sales is a component of helping them survive economically. To set an arbitrary date and have that date come to pass and eliminate the fuel would simply drive fuel sales to other states, because those aircraft doing business in Oregon are still going to come here. They just wouldn't buy fuel. And these small operators, particularly the smaller airports, would lose a big component of would lose their fuel sales, and which would adversely impact their profit potential and their survivability on airports. It would be devastating. And the cost of this legislation, as untimely as it might be, would be borne on the back of small aviation businesses in the state of Oregon. So. AWAMA, or our management association, strongly recommends that you not pass this bill. And I'd be glad to field any questions.
Thank you, sir. Questions for this panel? All right. Thank you very much for being here today. Is Representative Gomberg still out? He stepped in. I would love to allow him to testify on that Dory Brink bill. Thank you. So we will temporarily close the hearing on 2109. And come back to that in just a moment. Ma'am, we're going to stand at ease for just a minute. All right, we are back in order. Representative Gomberg, I'm going to reopen our public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 2575. And committee members, please note that the Dash 1 amendment is now available on OLIS. You can take a look at it. And I think Representative Gomberg is here to explain the Dash 1 amendment. And Ms. Joyce, thank you for joining us this morning.
Well, thank you very much, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Just to refresh your memory very quickly, this was a simple and straightforward bill that was intended to exempt dory trailers that are designed to operate in the sand, to back into the surf, and actually get submerged in salt water from the requirement that commercial trailers have mechanical brakes. And it seemed like a straightforward idea until we put it in writing and realized that it might be in conflict with federal highway regulations and potentially jeopardize financing at the federal level. And so I turned to smarter people than myself to come up with a way to make this work and still safeguard our highway funds, which is why Ms. Joyce is here.
Chair McKeown and members of the committee, Amy Joyce from the Department of Transportation. That's right, the Dash 1. We ran that through our motor carrier division, and it clears muster for the federal requirements. And as I understand it, because the dories, because of the business.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry, I can't hear the witness. Could we?
I apologize.
Speak up, Amy.
Thank you.
Chair McKeown and Amy, and Representative Vile, members of the committee, Amy Joyce from the Department of Transportation. The Dash 1 does get us past federal muster, and as I understand it, the business that the dories do constitutes typically intrastate commerce, and so they're protected by this amendment and accomplish what Representative Gomberg's bill intended to do.
Questions? Yes, Representative Ritter.
Madam Chair. Yeah, I was good with this bill when it was 10,000 pounds or under 10,000 pounds, but you get up to 26,000 pounds with no brakes, even just driving through town seems like quite a liability. And also doing a little research on trailer brakes, there are hydraulic disc trailer brakes that are stainless steel, you know, that are available. They're about $500 but for a single axle, but it just seems like putting in the number in the amendment, as long as it's under 26,000 pounds, especially when most vehicles that we're towing are not qualified to tow that much. And so what falls in line then? Is it the weight of the trailer and the vehicle that's towing that trailer, or is it just the straight 26,000 pounds that they go with?
Chair McKeown and Representative Barreto, I believe it's the combination.
Of both of them at 26,000 pounds?
Correct.
Any other questions for this panel? All right, thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee.
We are published for a work session on this bill. I will turn to Vice Chair Meek.
Chair McKeown, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendment dated 2-8-17.
Representative Meek moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendment dated 2-8-17. Is there any discussion? Yes, Representative Barreto.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I understand going along with federal requirements, but this seems a little loose to me to go that level of weight without brakes doesn't seem to be a safe solution for this problem. So I would be a no on the amendment.
Thank you. Any other comments? I would note we had a timing issue on the posting of this amendment. It actually was posted at 8:15, but it was posted to the wrong bill number. That's why you didn't see it in OLIS. It has subsequently been moved to the proper bill number, which allows us to go ahead. It has been posted now for an hour, so we are able to go ahead and adopt the amendment and address the bill. So I just wanted to clarify that for you. That's why it was in the wrong section. So on that note, Clerk, will you call the roll on the amendment, please?
Representative Barreto?
No.
Representative Evans?
Yes.
Representative McClain?
No.
Representative Noble?
Yes.
Representative Wilson?
Yes.
Representative Witt?
Uncomfortably, aye.
Vice Chair Vile.
No.
Vice Chair Meek.
Aye.
Chair McEwen.
Aye. The amendment is adopted. Vice Chair Meek.
Chair McEwen, I move House Bill 2575 as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Meek moves House Bill 2575 as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Madam Chair.
Yeah, I'm going to be a no on this again. And I, for the same reason that Representative Barreto has expressed, I know that we have a lot of equipment on the farm, for example, but any time we get a trailer with a cat or a backhoe or something like that that's over about 10,000 pounds, it really does require a whole different level of safety and trailer brakes, et cetera. And I just am not sure I've heard enough yet to be comfortable that we would have the level of safety on a real heavy trailer with a dory on it.
Thank you. Any further comments?
Chair.
Representative McLean.
I also didn't have a chance to see the amendment, and I understand the problem with the posting, and that's understandable, but I also feel the same way that I don't have enough information about the difference between 10,000 and 26,000. So I feel like at this point I'd have to vote no.
Let me stand at ease for a minute, please. We're back in session. In the spirit of making sure that we get this right, with the questions that have been brought up from the committee, what I would like to do is invite Ms. Joyce and Representative Gomberg back up. I think they have a proposal that may give some comfort to you all who have raised some legitimate questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. David Gomberg from House District 10. I very much appreciate the questions that you have raised here. Safety has to be paramount and when we're traveling around Oregon, and I certainly want my district to be safe, and that's where these dory trailers are operating. When the amendments were crafted, they were crafted to allow the maximum allowable weight under federal statute. I appreciate your concerns that that maximum allowable may be a little bit too much, and I'd like to suggest, if I could, that perhaps we hold this bill over, take a look at a more appropriate weight standard, and bring it back to you in the very near future. Ms. Joyce, do you have anything to add to that?
Chair McEwen and members of the committee, and Joyce from the department, agreed that was the 26,000 is based on the maximum amount allowable limit under the federal law, and I'm sure we could get a new amendment crafted and be ready for Friday's hearing.
So, committee members, questions for this panel while we pause and move forward and make sure that people are comfortable with what's happening here? Yes,
Madam
sir.
Chair, mm-hmm. I very much appreciate your willingness to take another look at this. Just so I understand, what typically are we using to tow a dory boat? Are we using a half-ton, three-quarter-ton, one-ton truck? What do we use?
Madam Chair, Representative Vile, I am not entirely clear on what the standards are. What I can tell you is that these things have been operating without mechanical brakes for as long as anybody remembers, and it's just recently that somebody realized that there was a requirement and folks started getting cited, which is why I brought the measure forward to you.
And Representative, how many boats are we talking about? How many in the fleet?
Yeah, maybe 100 vessels in that kind of neighborhood.
Okay, thank you.
Vice
Chair Vile.
I've loved watching the dories land, and even was ready to volunteer to carry this bill, but I want to make sure that we don't unintentionally open something up now with a high weight limit that's going to create a problem. I think protecting what we have that has been working, if we can get to that in language, I'd be very happy with it.
Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When it comes to brakes, you keep mentioning mechanical, but they're actually electromechanical, so they're electrically operated. But they also have hydraulic brakes, too, that are just surge brakes. They are available, and they're available in stainless steel, too. And I think for the weight limit that we first discussed, I'm good with that. But you get much over that if you've ever towed anything, like Representative Vile said, and it gets dangerous.
Okay. Yes,
Representative Noble.
Your explanation is exactly how I was reading this. I've never run operated a dory. My father-in-law did. And I've got some friends who do actually run from McMinnville over to Pacific City quite often. Most of the time, they're being towed by as much as an F-350, you know, a one-ton truck, which would never be able to pull 26,000 pounds out of the sand. But I appreciate knowing what the weight limits are of dories and how that impacts the road. Something that limits that down. I also, with the brakes, just to comment, I've got an aluminum boat that I put in the Tillamook Bay and the Columbia River and head out saltwater. Even the mechanical brakes, as you mentioned, which are on my rig, take regular maintenance and fail regularly. My assumption is that combined with the sand, which I don't have to deal with on a regular basis and in the surf, is one of the reasons that these brakes are very hard to maintain. So I look forward to an amendment that maybe outlines this a little bit clearer, specific for the fleet, and understand the issue.
Representative Wood.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And having had a very tragic accident happened with a trailer within a mile of my home, where a trailer that lost its brakes killed an entire family on Highway 30. It's something that I'm very sensitive to. And I know that there are options where, and I think this is what perhaps Representative Barreto was referencing, but there are hydraulic brakes on trailers that once the tow rig starts to stop, it then starts the braking system on the trailer. And I'm just I'll never forget that loss.
Any other comments? Thank you, Representative Gomberg, and thank you, Amy, for allowing us to revisit this, and we'll look forward to an amendment. We'll roll this until Friday. If we need to, we could go to next week, but just let me know how you're progressing with that, and we'll move forward to answer these concerns.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Right. Thank you, committee, for your time and your careful consideration.
You bet. Thank you, sir. I am going to close the public hearing, possible work session on 2575, and we are going to reopen our public hearing on 2109 and resume with our last three witnesses, Angela Crowley Cook, Mickey Barnes, and Neil White, please. We have exactly 15 minutes left, so if you could each keep it to 5 minutes, I would be grateful. Thank you for being here this morning.
Hello, I'm Mickey Barnes. Chair McCune, members of the committee, thank you so very much for hearing my testimony. I represent Oregon Aviation Watch. I'm the president of that organization. We try to address the adverse effects of aviation activity. There were a number of comments made today, but the most salient in my mind I want to start out with is I heard about the cost of retrofitting an aircraft, $30,000, and I heard a lot about the safety of pilots, and I too am concerned about the safety of pilots, but I'm also concerned about the safety of children. Now, when you think about an engine has no heart. It has no soul. It has no feelings. You know, if you compare that, if you will, to a child, and keeping in mind that this body we're given at birth is the body we have for life. Now, we know that lead has very likely irreversible effects on the human body. The literature bears that out. ADHD, birth defects, miscarriages, cardiovascular problems, possibly dementia, learning disorders. you know, ADHD in very small amounts. There's a researcher at OHSU, Joel Niggs, who has done a lot of study on ADHD and found even in very small amounts, it can have an impact on these children and on these families. You know, and I think Jim Lubisher brought up the issue of costs. We hear a lot about the again, the cost to pilots. Pilots, by the way, represent 1/3 of 1% of the population in this state. Children in Hillsborough represent, children under 18, 25, at least 25% of the population, if not more. There's also a social justice issue. In Hillsborough, 40% of the population is Hispanic or minority. So keep in mind that these bodies, these people were born with, are what they have to get through this life. And we have a responsibility as a society to ensure the health and well-being of these people. So I want to just clear up a few other concerns that came up as we spoke, or as other people spoke. Neither the port nor DEQ has ever measured lead emissions at the Hillsborough Airport. It has not happened. The numbers we get are all based on estimates. Right now, they are saying that the Hillsborough Airport emits 0.8 tons of lead into the air each year during the landing and takeoff cycle. This does not include run-ups, which the EPA has identified as one of the most significant sources of lead at an airport. That has not factored in. I think we could easily say that the Hillsborough Airport is pumping over a ton of lead into the air every single year. And between now and 2022, when this legislation might take effect, another 4 to 5 tons of lead will be released into the air over Hillsborough and Washington County. And that's just from the Hillsborough Airport. That doesn't include Stark's Twin Oaks. It doesn't include Skyport, the other two flight training airports, or the other 23 airports in the county. Now, as far as this business about the DEQ and EPA or whoever they're stating, Oregon Health Authority, never having found any levels of lead poisoning in Hillsborough, you're not going to find what you haven't tested for. Now, in June of 2016, the Washington County Public Health Department came out with a report. This is a quote from the report. In Washington County, population lead poisoning statistics are not comprehensive, and many at-risk children are not being tested. Of the 45,000 children under the age of 6 in Washington County, approximately 3% are tested for elevated blood lead levels per year. So to base your data on nothing, on no facts, no studies, no evidence, quite frankly, it's appalling and it's shameful. And David Farr from the Oregon Health Authority has said only 4% of children in Oregon are typically tested for lead. This differs. On the East Coast, you have mandatory lead poisoning. And in New York, they do have studies showing a correlation between airports and lead poisoning, as does Duke University. They studied 6 counties in North Carolina, and they found increased lead levels in proximity to airports. So, cost. I mean, we hear about...
Ma'am, you got one more minute.
Okay. We hear about the billions of dollars that these airports bring in. Take a look. Take a look at the Department of Aviation annual reports. Go to the back of those reports, and you will see that nearly every single state airport operates in the red. So if they're bringing in billions of dollars, why aren't they at least breaking even? Troutdale Airport is downsizing because in the 70 years it has been owned and operated by the Port of Portland, it has never generated revenue. Hillsborough Airport, they say, barely generates revenue. That's why they want these handouts from Connect Oregon and the FAA all the time. So let's not talk about what a economic engine these airports are. They are a drain on the society. Connect Oregon has given them close to $100 million since 2005. For what? To poison our children? To poison our air? To disrupt our communities with noise? This is unacceptable. I support this legislation, and I think it should be instituted sooner rather than later. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Ms. Crowley-Cook?
Madam Welcome. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. My name is Angela Crowley-Cook. I'm with Oregon Environmental Council. Just a little anecdote to start out my testimony. My grandpa, when he was not working at the ice cream factory, was a general aviation pilot, so GA pilots have a special place in my heart. And I hope the committee knows that the intent of this legislation is not to ground airplanes. It's not to cause mechanical problems in airplanes. Of course, that would create a different kind of public health problem. Obviously, we don't want to see that. But we support this legislation, and it's important to Oregon, because leaded general aviation gasoline is the single largest source of lead emissions in the U.S., which obviously poses a significant public health problem. The Centers for Disease Control has confirmed that no blood level of lead is safe in children. And we heard the pediatrician previously talk about the effects of lead on children. And if you think about our population, the IQ of a population is sort of a bell curve. And so if we think about, you know, maybe our higher achieving students, our super smart kids losing a few IQ points, maybe no big deal. Not great, but you know, if we think about the kids on the lower end of the bell curve who are already struggling, a couple IQ points that they lose because of lead in their system, it's a really big deal. That affects the family's life and the child's life forever. And it is a big cost on society as well. So I hope you'll keep those things in mind as we discuss this. There were some questions in previous testimonies about whether or not there is actually a scientific link between lead in the air and exposure in our bodies, and there is. My testimony has citations. The two studies are there is an a 2013 study of aircraft maintenance workers showed that those who worked at airports that sold leaded aviation gasoline had higher blood lead levels than workers at airports that did not sell the leaded fuel. And then a second study on leaded aviation gas exposure in 2011 found that children living near airports at which planes used leaded aviation gas had higher concentrations of lead in their blood than other children. So the link is there. We know that there are health effects happening in children right now because of this. And lastly, I'll just say that unleaded fuel has been available since the 80s and can be used in 40% of general aviation planes. So it's not a small number, 40%, that'd be a big reduction in lead in the air. Because the bill does give ample time for airports to go lead-free, we feel that this bill is an important step in sending that market signal to make sure that we can have unleaded fuel available for general aviation planes. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for being brief.
Madam Chair, sir. Neil White with the Oregon Pilots Association.
Welcome, sir.
I'm sorry?
Welcome.
Thank you very much. The EPA, current National Ambient Air Quality Standard for lead is 0.15 milligrams per cubic meter. Now, recent monitoring during the published DEQ located 1/4 mile from Hillsborough Airport shows that the annual average lead concentration was 0.0030, which makes 50 times below the National Ambient Air Quality Standard. Now, we do recognize that that there is no safe level of lead in the blood, but lead is a naturally occurring element found throughout various ores in the Earth's crust. So the sources of lead exposure, according to the Hillsborough Airport Roundtable Exchange 29 June 2016, Washington County and Public Health identified 8 items that are sources of lead. Lead paint, occupational exposure, hobby sources such as leaded glass, leaded shot, leaded fishing weight, etc., cosmetic and folk medicine, tableware, ceramic and lead crystal, contaminated soil, roadways, lead smelting and industry, and water from lead plumbing, imported sources such as toys, cars, metal containers, etc. Aviation fuel was not even listed as a source.
And as far as to identify that certain people have had elevated levels, that's not a quantitative figure. A higher level, what does that mean? It could be a minuscule amount and still be elevated or still be higher. So like I mentioned earlier, the lead level taken by the DEQ study was 50 times below the National Ambient Air Quality Standard. Now, as to the economy of this, we as pilots aren't simply addressing swapping out this engine for that engine to cost us $30,000 or $25,000 or whatever the case may be. We are simply asking for a replacement, and legislation cannot identify a replacement because the science is not there yet. And as already identified, even if it were developed and researched, it is not marketable because of constraints in the delivery system. But if we do want to address a little bit of the economy and how this will affect families all over the state of Oregon, the 2016 Boeing Pilot and Technical Outlook, and I will provide the resource for that. In 2016, the Boeing Pilot and Technical Outlook projects that 617,000 new commercial airline pilots will be needed to fly and maintain the world's fleet over the next 20 years. 617,000 pilots. And all of those pilots must have 1,500 hours regulated by the FAA to occupy the right seat or the co-pilot seat. Flight schools at Hillsboro, Troutdale, Prineville, Corvallis, Bend, Eugene, McMinnville, Scappoose, Aurora, plus numerous small airports all over the state of Oregon will be out of business if we do not have a replacement fuel. This is not about buying new engines. This is about replacing fuel that the FAA is currently working on. So you remove all those flight schools, that's one of the major contentions for Hillsboro Airport, and you're going to throw all those people out of business, and they will move to other states. But those are jobs that are here in Oregon now and are contributing to Oregon's economy. And then there is, as I mentioned earlier, a huge distribution problem. That hurdle has not even been addressed yet. So House Bill, Senate Bill 115 and House Bill 2109 are bad bills, and I'd urge you to vote no on it. Thank you very much for your time.
Your timing is impeccable, sir. Thank you. Questions for this panel? Representative Witt.
Madam Chair, not necessarily for this panel, but I'm curious whether we're going to be hearing from Portland Community College's aviation program, the impacts that this bill may be having on it.
Sir, I do not have them on our witness list.
All right.
So I can't. I'm sorry, I can't speak to that.
Thank you.
But is there anyone else in the audience that wanted to speak to this bill? I'm not sure we haven't. Is there anyone else? Okay. So I'm assuming that they testified on the Senate side, possibly. Okay. I know they had quite a lengthy hearing over there this week that went on, I think, for a couple hours. So they may have been over there.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, sir. Vice Chair Vile.
I just wanted to reinforce something that Mr. White said, and that is that those of us that own airplanes, even if it weren't an issue of money, we can't get an engine to replace in these older airplanes that we have that would use unleaded fuel. They don't make them. And so it's not that we're cheap. It's that we just can't do it. We would have no airplanes left.
All right. Thank you very much for your testimony this morning. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2109, and I need to go back and revisit our public hearing possible work session on House Bill 2575. We did have a motion on the floor, and I will turn to Vice Chair Meek so that we can tidy that up, please.
Chair McEwen, I asked to withdraw the motion to move the House Bill 2575 to the floor.
Thank you. And Mr. Walker, do we need a vote on that? Or can that be done by consensus?
That can be done by consensus.
Right. Is there any objection? Thank you. Then we will be rescinding the motion to move the bill to the floor. Thank you very much. And in the spirit of time, we are going to then move 2575 and House Bill 2695. We'll roll those over to Friday. And on that note, is there anything else for the good of the order? We are adjourned. Thank you all. For the good of the order, we are adjourned. Thank you all.